Yesterday marked the 10th anniversary of a record-breaking blackout that left New York and much of the northeastern United States without electrical power. As we learned during Hurricane Sandy, power can still be subject to events outside our control, despite improvements to the system. So, what, if anything, has changed in the last decade? Is our power grid still vulnerable to a widespread blackout? Joining us now is Jay Apt, professor at Carnegie Mellon's Tepper School of Business and Department of Engineering and Public Policy. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me. I expect the lights are probably on there at the moment, are they not?
They are. Well, you know, when Hurricane Sandy hit downtown New York, luckily this building had a generator, had a backup generator.
You know, part of the responses to natural and human-caused accidental losses of power has been business interruption insurance of various types. And certainly after 9/11, folks have put in more and more backup systems and put data mirrored in locations like Colorado when the data was originally generated in New York. And all that's to the good. Some of that's due to building codes. I think, if I remember right, in most cities, any building over 7 stories tall has to have emergency power for the elevators. And those kind of things can only help.
Were you living in the Northeast when it was hit by the blackout in 2003?
I was living in Pittsburgh, but I happened to be camping in New Hampshire at the time, and we didn't know that there was a blackout until we'd come out of where we were camping. Pittsburgh, as it turned out, was not blacked out. It's a very heterogeneous thing when you get a blackout like that, and some of it is accidental good, some of it's accidental bad, and some of it are people doing the right thing, and some of it are people doing the wrong thing.
Well, after a blackout, everybody is camping.
You know, I lived in Houston for 15 years, and every time that there was even a minor hurricane that came through, we'd be without power for 3 days to a week, and it was just something that you lived with.
Now, what happened to cause that huge blackout 10 years ago yesterday?
There were a bunch of things that happened. It wasn't an unusual day. It was hot, but not exceptionally hot. There was a requirement for more of a particular type of power, and a operator at a power plant on the shores of one of the Great Lakes, a plant called East Lake 5, attempted to give more of that particular type of power. And because he didn't have very good instrumentation, the plant went offline. And that caused a surge which eventually ended up cascading through the system. But it could have been stopped. The operators who were in the control center at the time were looking at their monitor screens, but the data on those monitors wasn't changing. The computer system had failed. The data had, the specialists called, gone static. And there wasn't a signal to tell them that the data wasn't updating. And so they were not aware of the magnitude of the problem. And that was one of the recommendations of the task force that reported the following April, was to make sure that operators knew the quality of the data that was being displayed on the screens in front of them.
In much of the writing about the blackout, there's mention made of a tree south of Akron, Ohio, as one of the causes. Can tree branches really cause that kind of blackout?
Well, what happened was the lines were loaded heavily. A lot of amps of electricity were going through them. There were three large 345-kilovolt lines and one smaller line, 135 kV line, and they all got hot. And as they get hot, when there's more amps running through them and the day's hot outside and there's not much wind, they sag a little bit. And the trees below them hadn't been trimmed very often, and they sagged into those trees. If you look out any window of a car as you're passing power lines, you'll see that there's a right-of-way under them that is generally kept completely clear. And this hadn't been completely clear, and so those overloaded lines sagged into the trees. But even then, it was a recoverable situation if there had been full instrumentation, if there had been quick action taken.
Well, like once they were aware that there was a growing blackout, were the operators in the Ohio Control Center, had they been trained to deal with a massive outage?
Part of the issue is that the training of the operators isn't as good, or wasn't as good then as it is now. Just as airline pilots describe their occupation as years of boredom punctuated by moments of stark terror, so do grid operators. And the airline pilots get trained to deal with a situation that's outside what they normally experience by spending a lot of time in simulators. And now the best grids have their people spend time in simulators, and they see cases that they wouldn't see in a lifetime at the console.
Well, you mentioned that the computers were not indicating a problem. Have they been fixed? Have they been updated since?
They have been updated. Fixed is a strong word. I think that they're much more reliable than they were, and there are indications to the operator that the data has frozen. Is anything that's driven by a computer ever perfect? Certainly not.
So we could possibly see another major blackout.
Oh, well, you saw one at Sandy. And we see them on the Gulf Coast every few years when we have hurricanes. We see them in the West when we have earthquakes. We see them in the mid-Atlantic states when we have ice storms. Certainly there's going to be another large blackout.
You've been monitoring blackouts, both large and small, for the past 30 years. Since we are more reliant on electrical power than ever before, are we more vulnerable to blackouts now?
We don't see any evidence that blackouts are more common than they used to be. We don't see evidence that they're less common either. But there's no indication that these things are getting more frequent.
On the other hand, life becomes harder because a lot of people are reliant on cell phones. Suddenly, you don't have that kind of service anymore. In a place like New York, the subways were closed down. All sorts of things that might not have been as big an issue at another time suddenly are a big issue today because we seem to be so much more reliant on electrical power.
Well, let's remember, the subways are a century old in New York, but we certainly didn't have cell phones a century ago. And it is true that people's reliance on electricity is growing. We no longer have coal stoves to heat our homes, for example.
I want to back up on the subways. They used to have their own generated power plant. They no longer do. We actually switched them over to the grid. So we made them vulnerable.
And I think that there are other vulnerabilities that have been centralized. There are also distributed systems that we didn't used to have. Because of business interruption, many companies have their own diesel generators and 3 days' worth of diesel supply. We didn't used to have that. Some homeowners have their own natural gas generators or diesel generators. And it's that kind of resiliency which is terribly important when the grid goes down. Despite the efforts of some really exceptional engineers working on grid reliability, there will be from time to time cases when small or large areas will be without grid power. And the trick is to make sure that the essential services that the grid normally provides are still there, that the hospital emergency rooms have emergency generators, that there are enough ATM machines with power to dispense cash for a neighborhood, that maybe 10% of all the gas stations have generators so that they can pump gasoline, that the bus terminals have generators that they can pump gas, or diesel, I should say. Those kind of things are important.
Jay Apt is director of the Carnegie Mellon Electricity Industry Center, professor at the Tepper School of Business and Department of Engineering and Public Policy. We're talking about whether the world has changed all that much. Enough improvements have been made to protect us against future blackouts of the sort that we saw 10 years ago yesterday and what we saw with Hurricane Sandy. And as we learned during Hurricane Sandy, weather can be a major unpredictable cause of blackouts. Since different parts of the country are prone to different types of weather damage, earthquakes in California, storm surges in Florida. Are power grids built differently to sustain themselves under different conditions?
Indeed, they are. In Florida, there are some utilities that use stainless steel components to protect against the seawater corrosion. In California, transmission lines are built so that every few towers is a very strong tower that can prevent a cascade of many towers being pulled down by an earthquake. In some areas that are prone to ice storms, there are coatings that are now being tested for the transmission lines to minimize the ice that's formed on it. Power engineers are pretty smart folks.
On the other hand, was what happened during Sandy predictable? And if it was, then why weren't we better prepared?
I think the answer to that is that there is a certainty that we will lose power in small and large places in the country every year or two. In fact, I've lost power in my home for, three times this year, and the last was for 38 hours on a hot summer's week. Most of the problems are small scale. There were only 300 homes that were affected when I was without power 3 weeks ago. But there will be outages, and it is the resiliency of the system that's important to protect when the grid does go down.
Well, is the fact that most of them are on a rather small scale an indication that we have seen improvements? Because 10 years ago, a large part of the country lost its power. There seemed to be a domino effect, one place and then the next place and then the next place.
Indeed, there was, and those kind of things do happen in large interconnected grids. We had seen it before in 1996, twice in the western part of the country, and of course in 1977 and in 1967 in New York. And so those things do happen. People are making some advances that I think are significant ones. The biggest is in the visibility of the power that sloshes around the power grid. And there are now very good new systems that allow the operators to have good visibility into what's happening in their grid. But still, the wide area communications and the wide area visibility is still pretty primitive. It's more like the air traffic control system was in the 1960s before we had centralized radar rooms and a national control center than I think any of us would like it to be.
3 weeks before Sandy, you wrote a Wall Street Journal op-ed that outlined some of the things businesses and institutions should do to prepare themselves. Were you being prescient?
Oh, I think it was clear at that time that there would be other incidents, and no one could have any knowledge of Sandy 3 weeks in advance, but we certainly can have knowledge that there will be events like that that we should be prepared for and make our own functions resilient.
How might an increased use of sustainable energy sources like wind and solar power affect the grid?
Most of the wind is far from where people live, and so getting it to people relies on transmission lines. And that doesn't really improve the vulnerability of the system. Solar may be a different story because a lot of that is local to load in places where it is quite sunny, the Southwest. And like emergency generators that people have, it may be possible that solar panels and batteries, even in battery vehicles, may help the resiliency of the essential services that the grid provides.
Is the power grid susceptible to terrorism? Is that something that we should be really concerned about?
The power grid is susceptible to a lot of both natural and human-caused disruption. And while foreign terror has not been a major player in the power grid, we've certainly seen transmission lines that have been attacked by disgruntled individuals or disgruntled groups, both in the U.S. and Canada. it will continue to be the case that folks need to be prepared, they need to spend money, and they need to have simulations and rehearsals for both natural and human-caused attacks.
Well, are there measures in place to ensure that our grid will stay safe from that kind of attack?
Ensure is a strong word. Nothing that people build is ever completely 100% reliable. There are a lot of people who have worked very hard in the last 10 years to make the grid less susceptible to some of the large-scale outages. But these things are pretty rare anyway, and so it's way too early to tell whether we have affected substantially the susceptibility of the grid to incidents like the one that happened a decade ago.
Many New Yorkers live in apartments, so they're unlikely to buy a personal generator. But other than buying a personal generator, what can ordinary citizens do to protect themselves against a blackout?
Without doubt, they can check their landlord and their lease to make sure that there is backup power in the building.
And if you have a small house?
If you have a small house, you can certainly buy a natural gas or a diesel generator. And many of my friends who live down in the South have done so because they know that a hurricane is going to sweep through twice a decade or perhaps more often.
And and if a hurricane sweeps through, they're very likely to suffer a blackout.
I
mean, can't we make our system a little safer from those sorts of things?
Oh, sure, we can make it a little safer. Whether we can make it invulnerable is a very expensive question. Invulnerable is a very strong word, and I think we're
unlikely love that word.
To have a system that's ever invulnerable.
Well, we would want to have it as invulnerable as possible, considering how much we rely on electrical power. But I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Maybe that's the ultimate approach.
Indeed. Well, you know, after some very big windstorms swept through France Christmas a few years ago, they put a lot of money into strengthening their transmission system.
Jay, we've got to leave it there, unfortunately. Jay Apt is director of the Carnegie Mellon Electricity Industry Center. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Call anytime.